Northumberland 89.7 is CFWN, truly local radio, serving Northumberland County, a not-for-profit volunteer community radio station.
The views and opinions expressed during the drive time with Dave Glover are those of Dave and his guests, and not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment for Dave? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now, here's Dave.
It's a moody Manitoba morning. Nothing's really happening. It never does. Just got up and waited for the mailman to bring me.
And welcome back to the Drive Time. That's a little Moody Manitoba for you from the Bells. And joining me in the studio right now, Rob Washburn from Consider This. Of course, he's an e-journalist professor at Loyalist College. And he has brought along a good friend of ours, Mr. Bill Patchett. Bill, welcome to the show, and welcome to the show as well, Rob.
Thanks so much,
Great
Dave.
Great to see both of you guys in here. Rob, I'm going to let you kick off the questioning. I understand you've got a question you just can't wait to ask.
It's true. It's true. Because, you know, having Bill Patchett here and somebody who can talk about so many things because he's so involved in the community, I thought I might start off by saying to you, I'm aware that council, Cobourg Council, is about to undergo its strategic plan session in February. And if you had an opportunity to stand up and talk to them directly, what would you like to recommend to them? What would you like them to be thinking about or strategizing about for the next 4 years?
Well, Rob, it's kind of early to expect much from them, but as we go along in the next few days, weeks, and months, I'm hoping that they have enough wisdom in them to realize that if they're going to help the downtown, which really is in dire need of help, that they've got to look at putting a proper program together and putting sidewalks throughout the sidewalks downtown, to put in garden beds, make it a people place, get more restaurants to open up. And the amount of money that with this revitalization, a few $100,000 isn't going to need it. They're going to need a few $1 million. And maybe they should look at such things as putting old-fashioned awnings throughout the whole downtown. What they've got to do is make it a people's place. They have a beautiful harbor. It's very successful, and people come from all over to visit it, but we need more done with our downtowns.
Now, you have a bit of history with the downtown. You used to be the president, I believe, of the Downtown Business Improvement Area some years ago. Is that
well,
correct?
Well, I was, but let's kind of go back a bit 30 years ago, because the council at that time, in their wisdom, decided that they needed more tax dollars. And remember, none of these people on council at that time were in retail or understood it. And they decided that they needed a mall to bring in more tax dollars. Well, that slowly eroded the downtown to the point where we have 35 empty stores. Then a few years ago, once again, the council, in their wisdom, decided that we needed box stores to bring in more revenue, and now the mall has half of the stores empty. So the difficulty is that the downtown, and these are all very small independent people, are struggling to make a living. And keep in mind also that these retailers and these small independents are at the forefront all the time to support all the nonprofit organizations in this community. They support the hospital, United Way, the Lions, the Rotary, the Kinsmen, all the sports people. And if they didn't have the money to support these people, then we would be in dire, dire trouble.
Dave, you were a downtown business person. Mm-hmm. Is this resonating with you?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, my concern with downtown, and I've said this a number of times, is a number of vacant spaces above these stores, which are quote-unquote uninhabitable, which means these store owners are getting a tax break because of their uninhabitable space. It's almost a tax gift to these guys. There's really no reason for them, no incentive for them to spend any money on upgrades. One of the things I'd like to see the council do is get rid of that tax break and tell these, because, I mean, you know what, if you're a property owner in this town and you have a basement that's not usable, you're still paying taxes on that space. as a residential owner. So why are we giving this break to business owners or to property owners in the downtown when we don't give the same break to residential ratepayers who, by the way, have to pick up the freight when the taxes are lower for their commercial counterparts?
Now, Bill, if I may also, the owners of the business, the properties downtown, the people that own them, are to blame here as well because they're asking for too much rent from these owners. My philosophy has always been that if you've got a happy tenant and they're making money, then you're going to make money. But when they ask for rent of $12, $10, $12, $15, when other places you can get it for $8 or $9, they're hurting the downtown business people.
Well, they are. And you raise a really good point. I was speaking to a person recently who was thinking about relocating to Coburg, and they said, look, why would I open a business in Coburg when I'm going to pay the same rates and the same rental rates as I would in the city of Toronto? I mean, we are charging, business owners are being charged the same rents that retailers are being charged in Toronto. And you know, we clearly don't have the same amenities or services that they would get as they do in the city of Toronto. So why are we doing that? You raise a very good point. I mean, it's all about, you know, what you can get, right? What the market will bear. And, you know, we've seen some stores stay empty for quite a long period of time because they're not able to get the rents they want. But you make a very good point.
I mean, another point, if I may, Rob and Dave, is that we're losing all our industry if we haven't lost most of it in this community. The people that were involved with the industries were making a fair wage, $25, $30 an hour. Mm-hmm. Now your wage structure in a lot of businesses is anywhere from $9 to $12. People don't have the money to spend anymore, and that's something the council, along with our liberal and our conservative governments, have to work on something, because if they can start to get the industry back in, they're going to create jobs. If they create jobs, then the people can spend it throughout our community.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a good point, because as Jim Flaherty said prior to his passing to Amanda Lang, look, we've already given corporations a more than 50% reduction in their taxes. And they told us that the biggest hindrance to them, they told the federal government, the biggest hindrance to their ability to expand, to hire more people, to upgrade, is this tax burden they have. So now we've reduced their tax burden by half. And what have they done? It's just as Jim Flaherty said, they pocketed the money. They gave away bigger bonuses. They didn't hire more Canadians. Now they don't have to train Canadians because they've got the new Express Entry Act where the Canadian government will find skilled workers for you. So, you know, I mean, Rick Norlock said this to me on the show, and I don't really think he realized what he was saying. He says, because I said to him, well, you've changed the immigration policy in this country. You're telling us that now your policy now is what can you bring to Canada, not what is Canada going to be able to offer you as a new Canadian. And what he said to me was, well, why would we bring in unskilled workers so they could compete against Canadians for jobs? So what I took away from that was, okay, so we have unskilled Canadians. Why should we bring in more unskilled people? We should only be bringing in skilled people. So which tells me that this government is not unhappy with the fact that most Canadians who are unskilled end up, you know, having to learn one very important catchphrase, and that was, did you want a double-double? Do you want a donut with that? Or would you like fries with that order? I mean, the reality is companies used to train people. Bill, you can attest to this. When you started in retail, I mean, you were hiring
been
young people.
Been there and done it.
You were training people. I mean,
that's right.
Some of the guys that have run the No Frills here and locally were, in fact, trained by you. They were mentored by you. And we don't have that anymore. And there really doesn't seem to be a need to do that anymore. Not with the federal government saying, well, we'll bring in skilled workers for you.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you must have more questions.
Well, I do, but I think this is a really important discussion because I think it goes to the heart of what we're talking about, and that is that, you know, if we want a vital downtown, we have to talk about larger economic issues. And I think, you know, municipalities have been fairly lucky in having a very narrow scope in terms of economic development, and it's been a very different market, whereas I think now there's particularly difficult challenges in front of us. And I wonder, as they go into the strategic plan, is what they're going to be able to do for the local economy. I mean, I don't think it's enough to just be able to go down. I know you were part of a mentoring program that was part of it, but I don't know how far we can really go with the programs that are current. I think we need new approaches, new ideas, you know, incubators, all those kinds of things. We need to see a really comprehensive economic plan. But maybe you could talk a bit more about that. I know you were involved with the mentoring downtown. Could you talk a bit about that?
Well, the mentoring program was put on by Rob Day, and I felt it was very successful. I had three or four I looked after, and the human being is one of them, and he's mm-hmm. still doing very well. There's a few others that are still there, but they're struggling, and they're only struggling because the people are not going downtown. What the citizens have to realize is that all these retailers and merchants that are helping them to support all these organizations, mm-hmm. they can only continue to do so if the citizens shop more downtown. They have a struggle ahead of them downtown. I got to be honest with you, as we lose more and more industry and people aren't making the money, then where are the people going to shop? A lot of people right now, probably 50% are going out of town. And mm-hmm. that's sad when I think of it, at least 50%. That doesn't help these merchants downtown. They're part of our town. You go back and you look at the ambience that we have on the waterfront and the different things that we have. We're a wonderful town, and we have a lot to show and give. But it's got to be a team effort. Everybody has to work together here, mm-hmm. and we're not.
Well, and the one point that people continually forget, I mean, I heard a counselor recently say, well, why should the downtown help businesses? If these businesses can't survive on their own, they shouldn't rely on us. Well, you know, tell that to the oil and gas industry. But what citizens of Cobourg and indeed Port Hope are forgetting is that the largest employer in their town, the single largest employer in the town of Cobourg,
hospital,
is the downtown. There are more people yeah. employed in the downtown of Cobourg yeah, than there are right. at the hospital.
I would have to say the hospital almost, is probably second.
Almost 1,300 people yeah. working in the downtown right now. That is a lot of people. That's a big income base. And I want to remind that most of these people are working for either at or just above minimum wage. So that's right. not driving a lot of money in our consumer economy.
And they do. These people, as I said earlier, are all independent merchants struggling to make an honest living. They're certainly at the forefront. I know when I go visit any one of them down there when I'm selling my flowers for polio or different fundraisers, I'm going, they always support me. Mm-hmm. And they all support the hospital, the United Way, and all these nonprofit organizations and the sports people. If they're not there, they're not going to support them. So mm-hmm. now you have the domino effect. And
absolutely.
Gradually we're going to erode and we're going to be in trouble. We're in trouble down there now. And I'm hoping the council, in their wisdom, wake up now that they got a few new people on there and they've got a retailer on there, that it'll make a difference. Because they won't survive unless the town gets behind them.
Mm-hmm.
I was particularly shocked, though. If you recall, when the vitalization people did their studies of the downtown merchants, though, there was a surprising number that didn't have proper marketing plans, that didn't have fully developed business plans. Now, there's some down there that are very good, very experienced, and you know the arguments you guys make are really good. But I wonder sometimes if are the people properly qualified to run these businesses, or are we supporting them enough, or are they doing the right things? I mean, it's great we can go down there and shop, but if they don't know how to do customer service properly, if they don't have proper marketing techniques that, you know, get their name out in front of people, if they don't have a business plan that is going to make them sustainable, I mean, is that part of the problem too? I think there's two sides to this coin, definitely.
You're absolutely right, Rob, and mm-hmm. the ones that are doing well, you can see downtown, and there are probably maybe in the whole downtown 10 of them that are doing extremely well, but a lot of them have been around for a long time, and the ones who are doing well know how to treat their customers, to look after and make sure they have the right wares to sell, they're open the proper hours, they cater to their customers. And they retain those customers. But the ones that don't do that aren't going to be successful.
Now, one of the things that you mentioned right off the top was all these sort of cosmetic changes, you know, flower beds, the sidewalks, awnings, those sorts of aesthetics. How I wonder sometimes, and I'm sure other people feel this way, how does that help the downtown? That seems like almost a waste of money, but why does it work?
Well, why does it work on Niagara-on-the-Lake? Okay, I know they have the theater there, but Niagara-on-the-Lake has not allowed any box stores or any malls in. Last summer, I started in Picton. I came all the way back to Port Hope. And as I started to visit these towns, Picton had one empty store last year. When I got to, is it Bloomfield?
Yep.
Bloomfield, they didn't have any empty stores. I got to Colburn, and they have probably four or five. Brighton didn't have any stores, but none of these places have the box stores or the malls. You come to Cobourg, we have the mall, so, and the box stores. You can see why there's a huge difference. Port Hope has maybe three or four empty stores. So it pretty well tells you something. To me, that's all common sense, and that's something that council should be looked at. I got to tell you, okay, in their wisdom, 30 years ago and a few years ago when they did the mall and did the box stores, these counselors were 100% wrong. They didn't do their homework or due diligence to it. They just looked at dollars and cents, said this is the way to go. They were wrong, and it's proven today. That's why.
Well, and again, you know, part of the beautification, and I understand where your question comes from, Rob, but you'll want to make it an inviting place as well. That's why you would do the awnings. I mean, one of the things that people loved about the human being was that we have the retractable awning. It's a great place to sit out in front and people watch. I mean, I had people who would come by every single day, get a coffee. When Ron Wood comes to mind, actually. He used to come downtown every day, and he'd sit in front of the store just to people watch. And those are the kinds of things that people will do if they're brought into an environment or an atmosphere that is that kind of casual and it's open for people walking. I mean, there have been some discussions that we close King Street entirely and turn it into a walking mall like they have in Ottawa. And I don't think we're there yet.
That would be a mistake.
I think you hit it on the head, though, when you were talking about the rate of the rents. I mean, you know, as anybody can tell you, as a former property owner myself and as a landlord, I mean, the reality is, you know, you're going to get the biggest, but yeah, it may take you a little longer to get your return on investment. But if you find the right customer or the right tenant, then, you know, you've got a long-term lease there. You know, you don't have to worry 2-3 years down the road. But if you're charging Toronto rents, I mean, you're already pricing your tenant out of their market. That's something that needs to be addressed.
The revitalization program has the poster up on Division Street on the empty building now. And when you look at it, and I just have to shake my head because we're looking at a few years down the road. By then, we're going to have a few more empty stores.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's possible. Anything is possible. Yeah.
I honestly must say that I'm embarrassed to say that I was part of it and that after a few years, we still haven't achieved anything down there and we're looking at a few more years.
Mm-hmm.
In their wisdom, the council should be on this right away and say, look, guys, we can't wait 3 or 4 years. We got to be doing something now for these merchants.
Well, and you make a good point because when we started to hear that Kraft was leaving, for instance, many years before, the town was all over it. They were on top of it. They didn't want it to happen. And every time we hear about another company, another major industry talking about the possibility of either retooling or leaving, the council's all over it. They're on it immediately. It's very, very important. But what they don't realize, and this is something I said a moment ago, the single largest employer in Cobourg is our downtown. And unless we are willing to support those businesses, and that means shopping in those stores, listeners, you know, I mean, maybe it's a lot easier if you're working out of town to do your shopping in Toronto. But, you know, one of the things I've taken to doing, if some people like to shop online, is I'll go online, I'll find something that I want, and then I'll contact my local retailer in the downtown and say, okay, I've been perusing the internet. This is something I really wouldn't mind getting. And if it's a similar store, I mean, there's a good chance you can have it shipped to that store and buy it from the retailer. At that point, you're still supporting the business. You're getting the product that you want. You're doing your research online, as so many people do, but you're buying it locally. And there are ways to buy things locally. You know, I mean, we can talk about the mall. I mean, my wife likes to shop at Ricky's, and she buys a lot of the stuff that she gets from Ricky's online. What does she do? She orders it online. They ship it to the store. The retailer gets the purchase. They make the money. So if we can find ways of doing that as well, and again, that's just what I call responsible consumerism. That's thinking about where your money goes because we've got to keep the money here, right?
What about though the leadership? I mean, you were talking about the downtown revitalization study and some of the inert things that are going on there. You know, we have the Chamber of Commerce, we have the downtown business area, we've got the revitalization initiative, and we've got the Economic Development Office, and that's just in Cobourg. Then mm-hmm. there's, of course, the county has its own economic development, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, what do you think about should happen there? I mean, is there any advantage in combining these things? And do we need all these business representatives?
This, Rob, this is just my thought. I think that what we need to do is marry some of them together. The chamber, the DBA should be run under one roof, and they should have a manager, somebody that's responsible. And if they don't do the job, you fire them, you get them out of there. Okay, I've always said that the town, rather than having a bunch of politicians, should have a manager to run the town. I think we would be further ahead. But that's just my thoughts on it. And, you know, I'm not always right, but 99% of the time.
Well, and the problem with marrying some of these organizations with existing organizations like the DBIA and the Chamber, for instance, is the Chamber has a very different mandate than the BIA. The BIA's mandate's very clear. We want to promote and maintain sustainable growth and business in the downtown. Now, the Chamber, of course, they have members throughout West Northumberland. So their objectives are a little different. But I think really one of the biggest issues we have in this community is the fact that we have an economic department or an economic development department in this town, quite frankly. And I'm speaking about Wendy in particular, that frankly either don't understand what economic development is or just don't want to do the job. And that's the biggest problem. I think a lot of money, we're spending almost $1 million a year on salaries for people who, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many, many people in this community, aren't doing anything. You know, we brought in Kevin Narroway. He was on a 2-year contract, hired specifically to deal with downtown vitalization. By the way, not revitalization. They're calling it vitalization. And he was basically neutered after his first 2 weeks. Basically told, well, we don't want you going to this meeting. We don't want you dealing with these people. And I mean, how can the guy be brought on to do a job when the first thing he wants to do, they look at him and go, okay, well, you've got ideas. We obviously don't want you to embarrass us. So they shelve this guy. And I mean, is it his fault that he's being told that he can't do it? I think it falls to the folks at the upper echelon. And I mean, really, what are these people doing? And if they're not doing the job, get rid of them.
Well,
keep that $1 million for something else.
I think
else.
We always have to keep in mind, though, the economic development, these people are out, they're working, they're doing things. And I think, you know, sometimes it's easy to pick on the civil servants and sort of look at them and say, it's your fault. I mean, there's
lots
of stuff.
Well, you say they're doing the job,
well,
but I don't think they
well,
are.
But let me just finish. I think it's really important that we remember that they have leaders. They have people over them that supervise and that give them their mandate and hold them accountable. And where I think we have to remember that these people work hard. They're not sitting around. They're not gathering dust. And it really comes down to the mayor and the council and what are they doing to hold these people accountable. And, you know, the Economic Development Office comes forward several times a year. They do a presentation. But what I've noticed is that council sits there like a bunch of lapdogs and pant and wag their tails and, you know, people go away. And where's the accountability? Where's the questions? Where are the things that say, you know, we have a vision, we have a direction, and are you meeting those goals? And I think there's a huge responsibility here, and I hope the new council embraces this, to start saying, look, these are the things that we want. Here's the goals that we want to attain, and you have to, you know, if you're not doing that, you got to get us there. And I think, you know, that would go a long way. Give somebody the right direction and give them the support, and by geez, you know, you'd be amazed what people get done. So I think it's really a political issue and the fact that everybody's, you know, waltzing around. If I don't know what you said about Kevin is true.
Narroway,
it's fine. It's true. I just think that, you know, it's – where's council? Where's council saying, you know, he's doing this, she's doing that, they're doing this, we're doing that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that's why I say it might be useful to bring some of these organizations together to amalgamate, to get focused so that they have clear mandates, they have to have demonstrable results, and let's get going. Because I think the next 4 or 5 years is going to be critical to the local economy.
If I may, Rob, I agree with you. It's very political. I truly believe that I think there's three groups that are involved in bringing industry in the community. I think they're working very hard, but how can they bring industry in this community when right across Canada, none of the towns are bringing industry in? So their hands are tied there. So I think it's something that the council really has to look at and say, look, maybe we should have one do it or two, but we don't have all the people that are working on it right now because they're not successful. And you're right about being political. I think it's time that the council, the politicians looked strongly at it and said, look, maybe we are interfering too much. Maybe it's time to step back. Let's get one or two to do the job and let them kind of run free on it. If they're not doing it then and they think they're not going to be successful, then it's time to get out.
Well, you raised a really good point, and that is the fact that they're chasing industry. And as we spoke, and we spoke about at the beginning of this, I mean, the largest growth demographic in terms of commercial taxation across the country is smaller mom-and-pop operations, smaller companies, not industry. It's those companies that are growing. It's the smaller retailers that are growing. That's where the focus needs to be. We need to sell Cobourg as a town to do business in, not just a town to have your stuff made and shipped abroad. And I think that's part of the problem. We've spent a lot of money, a lot of resources trying to find the next Kraft, you know, or trying to find the next Belden, or trying to find the next, you know, Manchester Plastics, when the reality is the largest growth is happening in small and medium-sized business. And that's, you know, small bakers. I said this before. We've got, you know, we've got all this space available over at the Kraft building where we could open, say, another smaller bakery, or maybe we could start producing other food products here that can be sold to this domestic market, this local market, and then by you know, osmosis, help lift all boats at the same time.
Or let's get a grow op going at least.
Well, we've got one coming, I think. Yeah. PV Pharmaceuticals.
Dave, I must say, though, that the small retailers and independents are the backbone of this great country when you look at all the little towns and all the little independents. Mm-hmm. If we lose them, we're in deep trouble. And that's one of the biggest problems that we have in this community.
Absolutely. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to pay some bills, but we'll be right back after a few words from some of our sponsors.
We've gone and done it again. You agree to plan your company's dinner party. Where will you hold it this year? Of course, there's nowhere better to hold large events than at the Legion Hall in Cobourg. Hold your receptions and private parties at the Legion Hall, and you can get them catered. Call Shelley at 905-372-6554 and book the Legion for your event today. And call Sue at 905-342-2087 for catering.
The Royal Canadian Legion, Branch 133, is located at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
Hometown Bingo is your community connection for fun and excitement 7 days a week. This month at Hometown Bingo,
all matinee and 9:30 p.m. sessions you can play for $2 per strip, as well as all day on Friday. You can also play for $2 on Saturday and Sunday at 3:30 in the afternoon. At all sessions on Sunday, the $40 verifier package is just $30, and the $60 package costs only $50.
Hometown Bingo in Cobourg, 884 Division Street, just south of Elgin on the east side. And check out their website at hometownbingo.ca.
I just got married, and I wanted to leave my collection of flannel shirts to my new wife, Lucille, in case of an unfortunate hunting accident. Because my cousin Bob was a lousy shot, let me tell you. Jim McGrath made it easy to make a will so that my three previous wives could not touch my stuff. He's been lawyering for 30 years, and let me tell you, he knows what he's doing. Plus, he's a real nice guy. Call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999 and tell him Cletus sent you.
Head to the Royal Canadian Legion this month to catch these great events.
On Sunday, January the 18th, there will be entertainment in the lounge with Percy King, 1 through 5 p.m. Also on the 18th, the Ladies Auxiliary Roast Beef Dinner is going to be held. It's at 5:30 in the upstairs hall, a cost of $12. On the 31st, come in for the Cobourg Legion Pipes and Drum Band, Robbie Burns Dinner.
The Royal Canadian Legion is at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
That does not sound good.
I know. And who are you?
I'm the Midas Touch, and I think you need me.
It's that bad?
Not for long. Head to Midas for a comprehensive brake system evaluation, and if needed, we can install brake pads and shoes that come with a lifetime guarantee. How's that sound?
Like sound advice?
Nice one.
Visit Midas at 6 Strathy Road in Cobourg for great customer service from licensed Midas mechanics. For details, give them a call at 905-372-1959.
Trust the Midas Touch.
Hello friends, I'm Lauren Fevens. As I hear from more folks who join me on Sentimental Journey, it's clear how enjoyable the music of the 1940s and 50s is to them. They tell me how easily very special memories surface when a song from their past is played. So come along for more of those musical memories on this week's Sentimental Journey.
Sunday mornings at 10 on Northumberland 89.7.
Head to the Royal Canadian Legion this month to catch these great events.
The Lee's Auxiliary General Meeting will be held January the 5th at 7:30 p.m. On the 9th and the 23rd, the Lee's Auxiliary Luncheon starts at 11:30 a.m. and there will be a general meeting on January the 15th at 7:30 p.m.
The Royal Canadian Legion is located at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
And welcome back to The Drive Time here at Northumberland 89.7. Like that again, of course, the bells. Love that little intro. I figured it was kind of mellow. Given the conversation we're having, it's nice to start it off with a little bit of a mellow note. Now, Rob, you wanted to talk about the hospital.
I did, because Bill's been very involved with the hospital, and both in fundraising and also his initiative in 2009 to save the hospital after there was some pretty major cuts. And I know right now there's a group meeting up there that are looking at rationalizing some of the funding and the budgets. So, Bill, again, if you were up there and you could be in the room, what would you be saying to these people? What do they need to remember?
Well, recently, as you know, Rob and Dave, I've been using the hospital to look after me, and it's cost the hospital probably in the last 5 months thousands and thousands of dollars. I've never had to use it before, but I must say that I'm happy that the hospital is there. The employees, the staff, the doctors are absolutely fabulous. We do have a Class A hospital, but one of the problems is now that the equipment after 10 years is starting to get worn and tired, and it needs to be replaced. And right now they have a fundraising going on for new beds. It's $5,000, a few hundred dollars. I'm hoping people will take advantage, or people who are using the hospital realize how important it is. We got to remember, too, that it's getting very difficult to run the hospital when we have 40-42% of retirees in this town, and every year that's going to grow. We get more and more senior people here, and of course when you're senior, you know what happens. You know, the golden years, there's no such thing. If you become sick, forget the golden years. You got to use that in hospital. So I hope people continue to support it. I agree that the hospital has a huge challenge in raising money for it, because the money is going to keep increasing for the cost to run this. And where the government's going to get the money from, I have no idea. I think more and more the responsibility is going to come back to the public to look after it.
Well, and you know, you raise a really interesting point, the idea that this equipment only has a 10-year shelf life, some of it only has a 5-year shelf life. And the sad reality is once we're finished using it, like, we can't use it beyond the so-called warranty date. A lot of that equipment gets sent to third world countries because it's not bad. It's not like you can't use the equipment.
They can in the third world countries.
It's just that it no longer has the protection of a warranty. And this is something I raised with Rick Norlock, because we were talking about the expense of healthcare. And really, the biggest expense in healthcare has been in new pharmaceutical costs and in the costs of equipment. And I said to Rick, you know, maybe the government should be looking at something to change the legislation around how long a piece of equipment can be used. I said, because we have a hospital now that's a little over 10 years old now, and almost all of the equipment in there has reached the end of its shelf life. Now, does that mean the equipment's no longer useful? No, we know that because we get to send it abroad for a nice tax write-off, I understand, but we still need to buy new equipment. And so it's like, it's the built-in obsolescence rule, right? And you know, is it really at the end of its shelf life? And if it isn't at the end of its shelf life, why can't we change legislation so that we can avoid these major dings? I mean, we're talking about almost all of the equipment in the hospital now having to be repurchased because it's reached the end of its shelf life.
The part that I find phenomenal is that the hospital raises about $1 million a year as it is. And now we're talking about raising even more. And in the community, when we've just been talking about the viability of the economy, the lower wages, where does that money come from?
Rob, the money comes from the citizens of Northumberland County. I can tell you, I do a lot of fundraising, as you know, and Cobourg, Northumberland County, is one of the highest-given communities in all of Canada. It's just phenomenal, especially the senior people. The senior people have been very generous, and so have the retailers, the businesses, the industry. Everybody wants to support our hospital, and common sense tells us that, you know, we're all going to use it. people give to three organizations. They give to the churches because they want to go to heaven. They give to the universities because they want a good education. And they give to the hospitals because they want to ensure their health is looked after. And I can't tell you enough that it's important that people continue to support our hospital because we're all going to need it.
What about this $10 million proposal for the medical center adjacent to the hospital? I remember back in 2009, you had a similar proposal.
I presented the same proposal to the CEO at the time, and he didn't pay any attention to it. And what they're asking the people to do now is to become part of the new addition they want to do and give $10,000 or $20,000, and they get 4%. I think it's a great idea, the part of building this, having the doctors upstairs and the drugstores and all the kiosks downstairs. My attitude towards it a little different than what we're doing now. I think what I would do, I would go out and ask people to fundraise it and tell them that they're securing their future to look after their health and do a fundraiser for the new development and have the money then go back to the hospital. And now they have money to be used for years to come.
So are you suggesting then that the hospital be the landlord and that the
Absolutely. All the tenants?
Yeah. And now I think what the proposal is that the doctors will keep the money. And you're saying the hospital should be actually be the landlord.
That's right. And the doctors and all the drugstores and the kiosks would pay the hospital the rent. Now, that's just my thought on it. And as I said earlier, I could be 100% wrong. But it's just, to me, it's a simple way to do it. And I think that people would support that. I truly do. And
well, that's interesting. Now, you mentioned before that you do a lot of fundraising in the community. And I wonder, you know, you were talking about people's generosity in our area and how that's going. Yeah, how have you seen fundraising change over the last 10, 15 years?
I haven't seen it change much. Now, a lot of people will give you an argument that, you know, because people aren't working, they don't have the money, or we have too many organizations out there fundraising. My philosophy, as you know, has always been if you ask, you'll receive. It's a three-letter word, ASK. If you don't ask, you won't receive. I don't think it's going to change one iota. I think if you go out and you put your presentation together well and you present it to the people you're going to, you'll get their support. If you don't do it well, you're not going to get their support. I, as you know, I do polio. I've been doing it for quite a few years now. I do half of Canada. And Bob, up till a couple of months ago when he tried, Bob Scott has always been my boss for it, and he's led the way for many, many years worldwide. And with just our polio, we've in 30 years, we've gone from 125 countries down to 3, and we've gone to 1,000 cases a year down to this year, maybe 500, and 400 of that is because of Pakistan. And that's our challenge right now. But it looks like Africa, within a year or two, will be free and we'll be down to 2 countries. But it's all part of trying to help make a difference, change the world, and help those in need.
Now, you've been doing a really unique fundraiser in the last couple of weeks you've been doing.
Well, as I'm using a hospital to keep me well, and I was losing my hair, I decided I would shave and do a fundraiser. And with the Bill and Melinda Gates adding to it, for every dollar we raise, we get 2, which makes it 3. So it's 3-1. We'll bring in probably $30,000 with my haircut just in our club. We're at 7,000. I have other clubs in our district, 54 of them, that I look after as a foundation chair. They're coming on board, and so are the other 23 districts across Canada, because I sent them all an email about what I'm doing. I turned it into fun. You got to have fun, and you got to enjoy what you're doing, and people are very generous.
What's the secret of fundraising? What do you think is the key to being a successful fundraiser? I'm sure there's lots of organizations you, would like to know.
You can't take no for an answer, and when they do, you go back a week later or a month later. You're perpetual. You keep asking them. You got to make them feel good about it. And as I said earlier, if you ask, you'll receive. If you don't, you won't. And but you've got to ask it. Not everybody can ask for money. Very few people, because they get a few no's and they get discouraged and they quit. You can give me 100 no's, and I'm still going to ask you the 101. Will you make a donation?
It's true. I mean, I have people say to me, you know, oh, here comes Patchett. I got to get my wallet out. You know, so I mean, you are known in the community as the go-to guy for fundraising. And as you say, I mean, you've got to be vigilant. You can't take no for an answer. There is no no when it comes to raising money, because you know you've got to get the money from somewhere. You've got to get the money. And so if you can't get the money, then...
Bill, how much have you raised? Do you have any idea?
Oh, millions and millions. I'm probably well over 100 million. I'm probably getting closer to 200 million. And
we're talking now. We're talking everything from hospitals to political campaigns.
Hospital to Rotary.
Legal center.
Everything. Oh. And I've been on many, many fundraisers in the last 20 years. And it doesn't take long to add up.
Well, I got to ask you this question, because we were talking about expanding and creating the doctor's center at the hospital, but we've got all these places scattered around town right now that have, a lot of them have vacancies, like the medical center across from the high school down in the East End and up here. And if we do build this new mega health center where we woo all the doctors into one prime location, which sounds wonderful, except as a landlord or a property owner who's going to lose a tenant, what do we tell those people when we've sucked their business away from them?
Well, that's part of doing business. And if you have the opportunity to move the doctors in and you get some of the new additions like the kiosks and the drugstores, that's a win-win for the people who are visiting the hospital. They can just go next door and take advantage of it. I don't have a problem with that. I still have one mall. I've got. I lost one of my main tenants, and that was Akon, which was Todd Sims Ubiquity. I still have two empty stores there, and for the last 6 months, I might have them for another 6 months. It's as I say, it's all part of doing business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have a problem with that.
Well, you might not, but I'm sure they might.
But we're all going through the same thing.
Well, that's
the
problem,
if we can make
right?
it easier, especially for the senior people, I think it's a great idea. Jack Russell's heading this up, and he's got a challenge ahead of him. But what he's doing, I agree with. I believe in it. And I think if everything comes to fruition, people will be pleased.
Aren't you asking those corporate or commercial tax ratepayers to help subsidize the dismantling of their own businesses now? I mean, if we're raising money and if the municipality ends up giving money towards the hospital to build this new facility for the medical arts center. And just so the listeners know, I don't have a problem with the medical arts center. My concern is vacancies. The fact that, you know, rather than, you know, infilling and putting people into places where we already have vacancies, what we're talking about is creating more vacancy. How do you square that circle?
Well, I think, first of all, this would be less costly, what they're going to do there, rather than relocate it somewhere else so people have the hospital. Now they're going to go a further distance to it.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's just a common sense thing. Like, look, we have the hospital. Let's put the center in there so we'll utilize it. Look at
Peterborough.
I was up there this week, and there's a hospital, and all the centers are right beside it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're close by. So to me, it's.
Oh no, it's a good idea. Yeah. And as a consumer, and as someone who has had to see specialists of my own, I've had to go to respirologists a lot of late. And I mean, sure, it'd be wonderful to have everything in close proximity to the hospital. But the real issue becomes then. I mean, we've got medical offices right here on Burnham Street as you head towards the 401. My own family doctor's up there. You've got the Medical Arts Center across from the East High School.
But they're close. They're not far away. Okay, but when you're looking for somewhere else to go, where are you going to put them, Dave?
Well, right now, you can put them in these empty spaces that are available in the medical arts facility across from the East High School, for instance, or, you know, any of the other vacant office spaces that are that, quite frankly, there's a plethora of. And what we're talking about building is more square footage, more office space. Are we looking to bring more doctors in from out of the community to fill those spaces? Or are we counting on the fact that people who are currently occupying the spaces across from the East High School, for instance, or up there on Burnham Street, are simply going to move their operations to this new facility? Yeah, it's wonderful that they're close to the hospital.
Some will, but not everyone will relocate to the hospital. But I think if you were to put it to the public and ask them, my guess is, and I would bet heavily on it, the majority of the people say put it right beside the hospital.
Well, we'll see, because I think one of the key things here is where is that revenue going to go? And I think your original proposal in 2009 was to see those revenues go back to the hospital. So it became a revenue generator for the hospital, and therefore, you know, some of the issues we were talking about earlier about new equipment and doing that kind of thing, I can see a real advantage to that. But if this is going to be privately held, or even if it's a nonprofit, you know, you begin to wonder, well, where is that going to go, and how does that benefit anybody? And so, I think it's a little harder to sell it from that standpoint of view. I know it's a nonprofit organization that's coming together to do this, but at the same time, it would be nice to see those funds funneled across, and I think that might mitigate it. But I have to admit, I mean, I wrote very strongly about this only recently. I've become deeply worried that we have all these empty spaces. It makes us look impoverished. It makes it doesn't look good for the town, and not just for medical centers, but for retailers, you know, the combining of the two hardware stores into that center. I understand the business case, but now all of a sudden we've got two major buildings now that are going to be empty. How long are we going to sit there with those empty? And you know, when are they going to be full? Yes, Bill.
But let me just say this. As long as the politicians, liberal, conservative, our town people, our mayor, are not doing anything to bring industry into the community, nothing's going to change. We're going to keep adding to what we have, because if people aren't making a decent dollar, then we're in trouble. So that's the answer to the whole thing. And that's
Well, I mean, a glaring example of what we're talking about right now is the dollar store. I mean, there's a big hole now at this Linmar property because they've moved their dollar store over to the mall. And granted, they didn't even fill, I think they filled either just less than half or about half of what the Zeller space was. So they've still got all that square footage available at the mall that's probably going to be underutilized for some time. But now we have this massive vacancy where the dollar store used to be, if they haven't gone already. And that property owner is now having to find someone else. I mean, what we're seeing a lot of is people moving from this location to that location. We're not bringing in any new business. We've created a hole in this guy's pocket rather than having a hole in this guy's pocket. And what we really should be focused on is not creating holes in people's pockets.
Absolutely.
I think the owner of the property in the mall where the dollar store has moved into was very wise, because with the success of the dollar store, and it's very busy, as you know and I know, that's an opportunity to have other people join that mall and to draw from their strength.
Is that a symptom of the low-income economy, though, the fact that dollar stores are doing so much better, that Walmart is doing so much better?
Absolutely.
We're seeing large retailers.
You hit the nail right in the head. People do not have the money, and when you look at the volume they have, and when you look at the stock market, the dollar stores keep going up. You know,
I'd like to, before we finish off, I'd like to talk a bit about Rotary. I know you're a longtime Rotarian. Can you talk a bit about what's going on with the Rotary locally?
Well, our Rotary Club locally does a huge amount to support this town. We have 140 members, and they're all very generous. We run the Waterfront Festival, the Rib Fest, Sportsman's Night, and some of the things that I do to bring money into the community. We bring in about $250,000 every year that goes back to the community. It helps many, many different avenues. The hospital is one of them. I think we just gave the hospital, again, $300,000, which I truly am happy for. Rotarians really go out of their way to change lives and to make it a better place. And the more people support us, the more that money goes back into the community. But we Rotarians worldwide raise hundreds of millions of dollars every year. We have, Rotary International has five main avenues. We have literacy, we have polio, we have peace scholarships, we have famine, and polio. I'm having a senior moment.
Trying to figure out what that last one is.
Five of them. Yeah. But that's hundreds of millions of dollars. And then we have another 5,000 that the different clubs around the world are involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is that Rotary supports all the nonprofit organizations. We support the universities, the colleges, the schools, the hospitals, universities. We support cancer, the Heart Foundation, Crohn's disease, and the list goes on. But none of those organizations support us. But yet Rotarians throughout the world support them with the 5,000 that we run throughout the world. So that's, again, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Can non-Rotarians make donations to Rotarians?
Oh, absolutely. I've had maybe 20 come in now for my hair shaving that I've done that aren't in Rotary.
Mm-hmm.
When we do our flower sale, we get good support from Rotary, but it's the community that buys all these things.
Right.
Anytime I've done a fundraiser for Rotary, it's not just the members, but it's all the citizens mm-hmm. in the community that come forward.
Well, I know we've all purchased your Rotary pumpkins at to know for
yeah,
us,
we,
so, you know, or the poinsettias.
Yeah, all those things, and the landlords are very generous, and so are the retailers and the merchants who mm-hmm. come forward to support it. So, Rotary, I must tell you, I'm in Rotary 26 years, and Wally Reed, who has been gone a long time, was the one that brought me into Rotary. It took him 5 years because I had six stores at that time, and they were in Toronto all over the place. I didn't have the time to get involved, but
mm-hmm.
once I did, it didn't take me long to realize what a great organization Rotary is and all the fine work that they do throughout the world.
Well, and you just raised a really good point, because it really is a commitment of time. It's not just about showing up at the events. It's about donating your time, being on the Sportsman's Committee, for instance, which is a big committee.
Big
for
job.
You guys.
Waterfront, Ripfest, mm-hmm. it's all huge. You know, many years ago in Rotary, it was considered an old man's club. It's not now.
Mm-hmm.
I was at Northumberland Sunrise this last week, and they have 52% female and 48% male now. So, you know, a few years ago, we brought the ladies in. If mm-hmm. we didn't bring them in, we'd be in trouble.
Well, you guys were, apparently there was a court case, I understand,
in
the mid-70s, where women were saying, okay, this is crazy, you know, do we
have to. Well, some clubs fought it. We didn't. We were mm-hmm. delighted to have them. And it's worked out well. And the ladies, once you get them involved, they stick to it, and they do a lot of work.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's made a huge difference for Rotary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, yeah, as I say, it's now, how does
one become a Rotarian? I mean, can anybody be a Rotarian? Do you have to be a business
person? Give your
person?
Name to any Rotarian and say, look, I would like to join, and they'll present that to the executive. They'll do a police check on you, naturally. That's important. And that's it. It's not difficult to get into Rotary.
So you don't have to be an independent entrepreneur or anything like that?
No, we used to have a lot of old guys, as I say, and they were the CEOs, the owners, and this and that. That's changed now. In Rotary, it's you've got all the working class now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the owners anymore. It's there's a few, but it's mostly people that are working for an organization or running a small business.
Mm-hmm.
What about the young people? I understand it's called Rotaract.
We have quite a few Rotaracts.
But it's for young people, isn't it?
It is for young people, yes. There's Interact, and there's Rotaract, and then we have the young ones that are, 14, 15, 16, and then you've got the ones that are 17, 18, 19, 20, and that's where it helps us to bring some of these young people into Rotary. For instance, Northumberland, they've increased their membership quite a bit. Northumberland Sunrise, they're doing a great job, but there are very young people there.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I go there, I can see the movers and shakers, and it's the whole club, you know. In our club, we have a few seniors that, like myself, that are getting on. You can't do the same amount of work anymore.
No, absolutely. Yeah. The next big event for Rotary is the Sportsman's Night.
Sportsman's Night, yes.
Is that open to the public?
Oh, yes. Yeah, anyone can go.
When is that? Do you know?
It's in February. I'm not part of it, so I'm just guessing. I don't want to give you date right. on it, Dave.
Well, don't give us the wrong date on that.
I don't
so
want to
I
get
guess
in trouble.
So listeners can go to Rotary Northumberland probably and get all that information anyway, right?
I mean, anywhere. Just phone in.
Just give them a call over at the Rotary. Now, you guys meet at.
We meet at the Best Western on
right.
Friday, and.
Well, good stuff. And again, anyone can join now, so it's a good thing. I'm just trying to find the date on the Sportsman's Night, listeners, so that we can let you know when that's going to be. Because that is a great event. That's a huge event. And it's
they sell it out every year.
Exactly.
And Gord Lay at Sportsman's Night is the master chef, and he does a fantastic job with the food. I don't think anybody in town could compete with him. He does such an outstanding job.
Well, exactly. And that's really what it's all about, folks, is being there, being on the
forefront.
February
6th, it looks like.
Yep, February 6th. So you can go and check out Sportsman's Night at February 6th. It's the Sportsman's Night dinner. All you have to do is Google Rotary Club or Bing, whatever your search engine is, Rotary Club of Coburg. You're going to get all the information on all of the Rotary Clubs, information on news, information on services that they're providing, the fundraisers they're doing, haircut to end polio. We've got a nice shot here of the patch himself right there. After a tremendously successful poinsettia to end polio fundraiser, Coburg past president and District 7070 chair Bill Patchett wasn't long coming up with another fundraiser for polio eradication, and that was the eradication of the hair on your head.
That's right. And my difficulty now is keeping the women away.
There you go. Well, it's that whole Kojak, Telly Savalas.
Rob doesn't have this problem because he's almost like me.
You could shave your head. I mean, I would, but I'm just, too paranoid, frankly. To shave my head. Bill, I want to thank you for being here. Always a pleasure speaking with you.
Pleasure.
You know what? Don't be a stranger. Come by any time. The chair is always open, as Rob knows. Rob, thanks again, once again, for helping us find just a wonderful guest this week. And
we will talk
to you again next week.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for today on The Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to Northumberland 89.7. Here's the Commodores, and sail on as we head into the 7 o'clock hour. Stick around, by the way. Cedar Rail is going to be on at 7 o'clock.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Dave.
That was my pleasure.
See you.